Hello, hello, this is the Daughter of Godcast, episode 047, What's a Watershed? In this episode of the Daughter of Godcast, we're raising money for Wild Waters. Hey, I'm going to be family friendly and a lot less ranty until after the open water swim in mid-August. So while the first 46 Daughter of Godcast episodes may not have been suitable for all audiences, this one, 047, What's a Watershed, is perfectly safe. Gather up the elders, tykes, and pets for an edifying watch / listen. If this is your first episode of the Daughter of Godcast, welcome! The Daughter of Godcast is a podcast about the making of the longest little movie ever, Daughter of God, a post-apocalyptic romantic comedy featurette written and directed by Sri Fuji Split, a.k.a. Dan Kelly, me, coming to screens in 2018. I've been making Daughter of God, or Dog, for 12 years. The tagline for the Daughter of God cast is the making of the movie that made me, because in all that time, I've learned a lot about myself, about being human, and how to live gently and prosperously on Earth. The Watershed Center is organizing an open water swim event and fundraiser. Every swimmer has to raise at least $150 for the Watershed Center. So what's an open water swim got to do with my movie? I love wilderness, the places where humans don't have much direct influence. Our health and happiness is all about wilderness. Robust wilderness is why our air stays breathable, our water drinkable, how we grow food and even keep our jobs. When I heard there was a 2-mile swim event coming up in the wild waters of Grand Traverse Bay, deploying a Daughter of God team made perfect sense. For now, the team is just me, a team of one. Lots of people helped with Daughter of God, so I really won't be alone. Team Dog's fundraising goal is $2,018, celebrating the year Daughter of God starts screening. On July 14th, 2017, Christine Chrisman, executive director of the Watershed Center, and I kicked back on Kids Creek and talked for almost an hour about protecting wild water and the upcoming swim. I've sliced our conversation into bite-sized chunks for your listening and viewing pleasure. Raising money for the Watershed Center is my first crowdfunding adventure, but after talking to Christine, I'm convinced that the Watershed Center is totally worthy of our support. So here's the proof, episode 047, What's a Watershed? And you can donate to Team Dog while you listen. Go to www.dog.movie, that's D-O-G.M-O-V-I-E, and click on the blue and white Swim for the Grand Traverse Bay Circle. All your money goes to the Watershed Center, and all your love goes to Team Dog. Without further ado, here's Christine Chrisman and I, and please give generously. I'm here with Christine Chrisman. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Awesome. And who are you, Christine?
I'm the executive director of the Watershed Center, Grand Traverse Bay.
The Watershed Center of the Grand Traverse Bay. Mm-hmm. What's a watershed?
That's a great question, and it's a term that we use a lot, but realize it can be difficult to understand what that is. So it's actually an area of land, which is counterintuitive, that okay. You're talking about a watershed, but it's an area of land where water that falls onto that land all goes into a common water body.
Okay.
So you can have a really small watershed, like for a really small stream, or you can have a really big watershed, like the Great Lakes watershed. And so your watershed area is really just everything that's draining to a common body of water.
Okay, so when you say the Grand Traverse Bay, then that would be all of the land that feeds into the Grand Traverse Bay.
Correct. It's okay. About 1,000 square miles, so it covers about 4 counties.
Wow.
So it's a pretty big area.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Why should we care about watersheds?
It's funny because most people think that you're connected to water if you live near it or you play on it or whatever, but with the concept of a watershed, it really shows that no matter where you are, mm-hmm. you have a connection to water and you have a responsibility to protect that water.
Okay.
So you could live 3 miles from a body of water,
mm-hmm.
but whatever you're doing on your property or whatever things are, you know, whatever rainfall is happening and all of that, actually that water is going to end up getting out into whatever that nearest body of water is.
Okay.
And so that connection, that realizing that you can be far away from a body of water but still have an impact on it, I think is something that most folks don't realize.
Oh, wait a minute, though. I know somebody who has a house in the middle of a field. There's no rivers or streams around them. How does that work exactly? Like if they go and they pour some water out in their yard, or they water their lawn, how does that water get into the watershed? How does it get into Lake Michigan? How does it get into the bay?
So any water that falls on land, mm-hmm. is either going to go across the top of the land, yep. or it's going to infiltrate into the groundwater.
Okay.
And so, you know, a great scenario is to have water fall on your land, have it infiltrate into the groundwater. All the bacteria and the stuff in the soil take out all the bad things.
Uh-huh.
And it eventually, over a long period of time, that groundwater is connected and will flow downhill towards whatever that common body of water is.
So what I understand groundwater to be is it's kind of like, not exactly underground lakes, but big gravel basins or something that there's water trapped in. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a lot of different places where water can be underground.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think, I mean, like, for example, folks who are not on some sort of municipal water system, they have a well. And so that well is usually tapped into some sort of cistern or underground storage place for that water.
Okay.
So that's the biggest part. But then you can also have water sort of trapped in the soils, and, you know, there's a lot of spaces that it can be. So it's going to move its way either in that larger cistern or sort of just through that soil. I mean, I'm not talking quickly, but it all will end up going downhill and getting into a larger body of water.
So that's, I guess, when people talk about, like, gas stations. Oh, look, there's a cat. Come here, kitty! Kitty! We might have a cat on camera. Like when a gas station has underground tanks, obviously you're driving to a gas station, you're pumping that gas up from a tank mm-hmm. underground. Sometimes those gas tanks leak, and then that gasoline's underground moving along in the groundwater.
Correct. Or just being in the soil, too. So it all, you know, one of the big issues where you get areas of concern is when you have things like dry cleaners or gas stations that had things that were underground and they leaked, and now it's in the soils, it's in the groundwater. The sediment in the soils under the ground are really what take out all the pollutants. And so if those are polluted themselves, then that sediment isn't doing its job and taking out anything, and you're actually polluting more water as it's going through that system.
How does sediment take stuff out? I mean, how does sediment purify water?
It's all bacteria and
okay.
everything that's in it.
So it's life,
nutrients,
really.
It's decomposing things. It's all the stuff that it's the properties of the soil itself. So there's certain things that will bind to the soil and pull it out. And then it's the things that live in the soil
okay.
that do it as well. So
okay. Clearly we've got this thing called a watershed. I wonder, do you think that a lot of people are aware of this thing called a watershed?
I don't think most people are.
Why is that?
I think folks get that concept of when they are on the water, that is one thing. But that concept of really things in an area of land affecting water, I'm not sure that that's, you know, sort of what you were just saying is, how do you make that connection if you don't see it and you're not close and you don't understand it? Most folks, I don't think, make that connection between their house and whatever their body of water is.
Hi, you're really okay. I just want to grab this. Okay, look, there's actually an actual cat here visiting us in the watershed.
Hi, kitty.
Very, you know, a little skittish, but pretty cool. I'm going to let her go.
She didn't want to get past us.
Oh, I'm out of here. Woo! So people don't quite get it because they don't understand necessarily. They're sitting with their house on a piece of land, but they don't really understand what's underneath them so much.
Right, right. And, you know, depending on where you get your water and, you know, how you dispose of your wastewater and all that sort of thing. There's folks that, you know, stuff comes in and out of their house and they don't think about it. You know, they are doing whatever they're doing on their property. And if you don't see that direct connection, sometimes it's hard to realize that you have an impact.
So if you have, if you like the water, if you like rivers and lakes and whatever, and you like them to be clean, then actually every single person who lives on land has some contribution into whether or not those bodies of water stay clean.
Absolutely. I mean, there's areas that are more critical than others. Obviously, if you live closer to a body of water, you have a more direct impact.
Yep.
But really, it's that responsible thinking of, you know, what you do on your property and how that's going to affect the person downstream. I think we started to see, you know, these days that it really is when you don't think that there's an issue, And you can't see that direct impact on yourself or, you know, your property. You forget that there's folks that are downstream that are dealing with what, you know, whatever you've done. Mm-hmm. And so it's really just sort of that awareness of thinking about your place in the world, honestly, and how things that you do, it's not just for you, it's for the folks you live around and for everybody here. So.
Right, and I guess if you want to think about it in terms of jobs and economy, you know, we have a lot of our economy, people say, is based on the water. Mm-hmm. People coming to fish and sail and, you know, and vacation. Yep. Here and being on the rivers or on the lakes. And so if you care about the local economy, then you just being here, just living here is a huge responsibility.
Absolutely. And, you know, honestly, it's also one of the biggest challenges that we have because we have great, clear, clean water. And a lot of time you can get into that mindset where, oh, what's the one little thing I'm going to do going to affect this exactly. really great water that we have? And that, again, it's sort of that collective impact that everybody has. So if everybody thought that way. But it's actually a challenge that we have because our water is so clean and clear and, you know, we are working to protect it. We're yep. not trying to restore it. Mm-hmm. That most people can get complacent and forget that there's things that are really going to impact that and that it really takes everybody as a collective to protect it.
So the Watershed Center, how did that get started? I mean, why isn't a government organization handling these kinds of issues and yeah. educating people?
So there's a lot of groups that do similar things that we do.
Okay.
We're the only group that does it for this specific body of water.
For the Grand Traverse Bay.
And I think that's
Bay.
Important. Yeah, we really, you know, we look at larger issues, regional, Great Lakes-wide issues, but we really are focused on Grand Traverse Bay, and we consider ourselves the voice for the Bay. Mm. So we look at small, local things that most people don't care about or want to get involved in, like what does a zoning ordinance say and how do those things protect water quality. And so our organization started about 25 years ago of a bunch of organizations coming together and sort of saying, let's learn from each other, what is everybody doing, let's start sharing resources. And there sort of out of those conversations came, well, there really isn't anybody that is sort of this umbrella that's looking at this area and what is everybody doing and what should we do to protect it. And so kind of one thing led to another, and out of a group of just people getting together at lunchtime, mm-hmm. it sort of turned into its own organization and has changed a little bit over the years, but really its main focus is still to protect water in Grand Traverse Bay and have that local look at things. Meanwhile, you know, getting involved in what other people are doing on a larger scale as well, recognizing that things that happen throughout the entire Great Lakes are going to affect our watershed. Mm-hmm. But spending most of our resources on that super local level and having that stuff sort of broaden itself into the bigger watershed.
So clearly we're at this little pristine spot and you can hear water gurgling and this is Kids Creek. Around us is the Munson Hospital in a back alley of a neighborhood. I mean, we're right in the middle of the city here, and yet, you know, it feels like we're in this little spot here as a little perfect little green space. Who did this? Who's responsible for making this happen? And the other question is, was this a restoration project?
Yeah. So this is like our own little Central Park, right? So our version of it. Kids Creek runs mostly underground, but through most of downtown Traverse City. You don't know it's there.
And let me ask you something. So when you say it runs mostly underground, it used to be a creek above ground.
It did.
But as people built roads and whatever, they put it through culverts and it slowly went in the dark.
Yeah. That's why most people don't even know it's there. Most of it sort of runs through pipes and every once in a while will come out a little bit and then goes back underground. It comes out in the Boardman right before the Boardman comes out into Grand Traverse Bay. So,
okay.
And it goes through a lot of downtown. It's an impaired water basically because it runs through culverts.
What does that mean, impaired?
Well, so technically, it's impaired because there's too much water going in and there's too much sediment and pollutants that are getting into the stream.
There isn't any life to actually cleanse that water.
Right.
Like it used to have open space with wild things growing around the banks.
Right.
Those banks aren't there anymore. It's underground, so there's no plants that can grow there.
Yep. No habitat, no insects, no fish.
Right.
Basically, it's kind of devoid of life, and that's because there's too much water that gets into the system and there's too much sediment that comes and kind of clogs everything up. So it's an impaired water, And what we have been trying to do at the Watershed Center with a lot of different partners is sort of, we're trying to get it off the impaired waters list. So it's technically on a list that the state has that says this water needs protection, it needs restoration, you need to focus on it
because
it actually has these issues that have been identified. So we've received funding from various sources over the years. We've gotten over $4 million to do work just on Kids Creek.
Wow.
Just in this little sort of campus area and a little bit upstream as well. So we've partnered with Munson Medical Center when they were going to build this cancer center. The story is they sort of came to us and they said, hey, we want to build this cancer center. The problem is there's a stream in the way. We want to move the stream. And we were like, all right, this is ridiculous. Like, we're getting ready for a fight here. And then they started talking about what they wanted to do. They wanted to move it. They were going to buy all of this land. They were going to, what's called daylight the stream, which is basically show it light again. And they're going to take about 900 feet of the stream, take it out of its culvert, turn it back into a natural free-flowing river, you know, do a little buffer, have some walks and stuff so folks who are at the cancer center can come out and enjoy nature and have some peaceful time. So we really got on board with that pretty quick. And that's sort of what this section of this creek is taking it out of a culvert, moving it. We created this river channel 3 or 4 years ago, and right now it looks like it's been here for 100 years.
It really came back very quickly.
It's great. It's fantastic. We manage it for invasive species, so pulling out species that could come in and sort of take over and harm some of the other plant and animal life that might be here. So we manage it for that, but that's pretty much it. They've done fish studies, and the fish are back, and the insects are back,
wow.
And it looks like it's been here forever. So it's been a great success story, I think, of what you can do. We had the space, which is great, and
mm-hmm.
that's not something that, you know, that's a luxury in downtown. So you have the space to be able to do something like this, but it's really its own little garden in the middle of a, you know, a neighborhood and a hospital and
yeah.
can be used for a lot of different ways.
Is who paid for most of that? Was that the hospital paying for that, or was that you guys raising the money for that? Who actually made this happen?
It's a combination of folks, yeah.
Okay.
So we received a Department of Environmental Quality grant. We've received some Great Lakes Restoration Initiative funding. Munson has put in quite a bit. There's been some foundations and stuff that have put in little pieces here and there. So it's really been a collective effort, and actually a great example of how partnering on things like this actually gets a lot more done.
Nice.
And so we've been able to do, besides the Kids Creek stuff when they were building the cancer center, they did underground infiltration trenches, which is basically taking stormwater that they have and allowing it to infiltrate under their parking lot. You'd never know it's there, but it's treating all of the stormwater that comes off the cancer center. So we were able to insert some things, you know, like that helps that cancer center manage its own stormwater as well, besides doing just the work on the creek.
I've seen some nonprofits that have a toxic agenda, and some nonprofits seem to exist pretty much just to pay the salaries of their staff. So what is it about the Watershed Center that is not like that?
So we have, I'll call sort of two main things that we do. One is what we've been talking about, on the ground projects. So we have a plan. We have a watershed protection plan that identifies priorities of things that we would like to see accomplished so that we can protect the bay.
And these are all like renovation projects or remediation projects where you're trying to get water back into a more natural state.
Yeah, we're looking at places where there are issues where there's too much stormwater or too much pollution or too much sediment getting into the water and impacting the bay.
Okay.
And so we're trying to look at those projects, sort of prioritize those in terms of how much are they actually affecting water quality, and I'm going to say take care of them,
mm-hmm.
right? So that on the ground stuff. Then there's the sort of advocacy work that we do. And that to me is the piece that is more difficult for folks to really understand the impact that some of that work can have. And that is the stuff that's harder to fund. It's harder for people to really recognize that you're accomplishing an outcome as opposed to, okay, now we've restored this creek and you can see that. That advocacy work and the stuff that we do there is really being the voice for water quality. And it takes on a lot of different ways of how we do that. But that's the majority of our effort, is looking at things that are going to impact water quality and speaking out, trying to get things changed, trying to educate folks and help them understand, trying to get simple things, water quality friendly language and ordinances like that. Fighting that fight that I think is totally behind the scenes, not totally behind the scenes, because we do speak out publicly on these things too, but a lot of that sort of how do we, on any level that we know about, how do we protect water quality? So we practice what we preach and doing the on-the-ground stuff, but then that advocacy work, I think, is pretty unique in what we do as a nonprofit that most other groups don't, and that's speaking out against things that we think are harming water quality.
So you're not necessarily, you know, go along and get along sort of organization. If something is not fitting into a, if something doesn't actually serve the bay or is actually detrimental to the bay, or the watershed, you guys are going to stand up and say something about it.
We do. And, you know, our preference is to work sort of behind the scenes as much as we can. But if that doesn't work, then we will publicly go out and start to talk about things. We use a lot of avenues. We go to a lot of meetings. We do a lot of public commenting. We use editorials, that sort of thing. And most of that is trying to look at what's the issue and how do we think it's impacting water quality, and then educating folks about, you know, why it is that that's so important.
I first heard of you and your organization when we were at the city council meeting. I talked about this in the previous episode, 046, about there's a proposal to do big jet boat races in the bay. And, you know, I went up to find out, okay, well, how much public opposition was there going to be to that? Because if there wasn't enough, I was going to start some. And you stood up and you said, oh, well, you know, my organization is going to be impacted by this event because we have an open water swim fundraiser that happens that day, that last day. I was like, what? Open water swim fundraiser? What? You made a point of standing up and talking about how that was, you know, detrimental to the event, but I also got the feeling that maybe that also kind of went counter to the watershed. Was there other things about that that you...
I mean, there's a fine balance between encouraging use and recreation water, which we absolutely do. You know, we like to provide access. We like to make sure that people are able to enjoy the water.
Sure.
But there's sort of a fine line between what's reasonable access or reasonable use, and how can you use that without harming it? And so there are things that I think just take that one step a little bit too far that I think is exploiting that resource a little bit. And so, yes, you know, where you can do everything you can and have all the safety measures in place, but it just takes one accident.
That's
It takes one little leak. It takes one spill. It takes whatever. One little teeny thing, and you know, that water resource that now we are no longer protecting, now we are trying to restore because there's been something that's happened.
Right.
So if you can get out in front of those things and prevent those kinds of things from happening, you allow folks to reasonably have access to and reasonably use
and
those resources.
And share it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the idea, is we're all sharing this thing,
right,
this resource. Your board of directors got 7 men on there and 3 women.
Mm-hmm.
How's that balance feel for you as far as gender goes?
We are always trying to find new board members, new skill sets, folks that have different backgrounds. We recently just sort of built our board up to what it is now and are sort of working through a lot of things that boards do, strategic planning and that sort of thing. And the group of members that we have on right now are extremely dedicated and very passionate and have helped us sort of build some of those basic building blocks that we need in order to move forward and be successful. So I'm very proud of our board and the role that they've taken on and sort of embracing the stuff that nobody really likes to do, which is planning all of that kind of stuff, right?
It's a huge amount of work.
It is.
And these board members are all volunteers?
All volunteers, yep. They help fundraise for things. They volunteer at events that we have, you know. They do a lot for us. So yes, always looking for new people to get involved. There's people who term off and people who move and come in. But I think the board that we have right now is really solid, works really well together, has differences, but understands how to come out of a room with a common goal. And has really helped us move forward. I mean, we've moved the needle a lot on where I think we can go in the next 5 to 10 years, just in the last couple of years and a lot of work that they've put in with us.
And just to kind of go a little bit further with this conversation, I noticed that basically most of the people are probably in their 50s, I would say.
Yep.
And again, you know, finding competent, motivated people to work for free is tricky. And but I'm wondering, have you reached out to any of the tribes at all to see if anybody would want to come on from the tribes? And how about 20-somethings? I know 20-somethings have school and a life, but is there a maybe possibility to bring those people on with maybe some kind of small stipend, you know, to actually bring a stipend board member on who would otherwise have to go and work, you know, a job?
Mm-hmm. I mean, possibilities are endless.
Sure, of
absolutely,
course.
Absolutely, right? We do have two new board members who are, you know, working force folks. And, you know, are available as much as they can be, but also have, you know, jobs and families and stuff. So, you know, finding that balance, I think, is important. We used to have a tribe member on our board, and it worked out great for a period of time, and we reach out to them. Actually, we've reached out to them recently. So it's there's always possibilities and stuff that are out there. Anybody I see, any conversations I have with anybody, I'm always thinking about that. We do have gaps in both skills set, you know, in our knowledge base and sort of in our age and demographics and all of that. I'd love to have people from different areas of our watershed. We have a lot of heavy focus on Traverse City. I'd love to have some people that sort of represent some of the other areas that we cover.
Because it is, you say, 1,000.
Yeah, it's 1,000 square miles. So goes, you know, Northport all the way down in the Kingsley area, Kalkaska, the whole chain of lakes. So all the way up, you know, in Antrim County. So it covers a really large area, a lot of different smaller urban centers. You know, there's a lot of farms in that area, a lot of agriculture. So having board members that really represent those different demographics that our watershed actually serves, I think is important. So always looking for some to fill some of those gaps.
That's cool. And so if anybody came to you and said, I'd like to serve in this watershed center, you'd be like, all right, well, you know, you'd definitely be wide
Let's
open to
talk.
Talking.
Absolutely. Yep.
You've been protecting wild waters with a Daughter of God cast, episode 047, What's a Watershed? We're feeding at least two birds with one tasty seed here. Everyone lives in a watershed, even if you're smack dab in the middle of Traverse City or New York City. Everything you do eventually touches wild water. Water is survival. A huge chunk of Earth's life support system is ocean and inland sea based. Help Team Dog protect wild water with a donation of just $11. You can give a lot more, but we're excited to have lots of small donations from lots of excellent people, like you, and thank you. Meanwhile, there's a movie, Daughter of God. After all this podcasting and wild water resonance, ranting, evangelizing, and hubbub, she is coming. Tell everyone you know.